You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show.
All right, folks, we wanted to give you an update on the situation. So Israel, extraordinary ability to defend itself. Yes, help from the U.S., of course. That should not diminish the fact that the Iranians launched something like 400 missiles and drones. This was a major assault. It was resisted with a major defense. But this is a very big deal, and Israel has every right to respond. I'll get to that in a second. Biden now puffing out his chest, Claude, saying, where would Israel represent? Ironclad. I think he's feeling bad about the distancing from Israel, or he's just being flip-flopped back and forth by his staff, who say, well, let's get hard on Israel. Oops, we better get soft on Israel. In any case, Israel is an amazing place. They could stand up to this Iranian assault. Now, I find a couple things interesting in this. One is that Biden has, what I've just mentioned, Biden has switched and is now 100% with them. However, he's not with them responding to this attack. How you can say they shouldn't respond is crazy to me. You got 400 missiles and drones launched at you. You managed to shoot them all down, or most of them, not primarily by the Iron Dome, but by, I love that name of that thing, David Sling. Did you notice that, Claude?
Yes, I did.
David Sling, good for the Israelis. But that doesn't mean that this wasn't a really vicious assault. Israelis should respond, and Biden should be with them. The second thing I notice is that for the second time, John Fetterman, senator from Pennsylvania, this was the senator whose mental capacity was very much in question. We questioned it. Others questioned it. Here he is again, this time, parting company with Biden. Let's let him speak for himself.
Senator, what is your reaction to Iran's attack on Israel, and how worried are you that this is the beginning of an open war between the two countries?
Well, a couple of things, actually. I think it really demonstrates how it's astonishing that we are not standing firmly with Israel, and there should never be any kinds of conditions on all that. When a nation can launch hundreds of drones towards Israel, and I'm not going to be talking about conditions ever. And second, I think that also was Iran had to have some fireworks after Israel smoked that Iranian general. And I'm here for that. And I think it's just a matter of theater part of it as well, too. And it demonstrates how unstable things are and why we need to lean in and stand with Israel.
Marco Rubio was just on the show, and he said the White House leaking the fact that Biden told Netanyahu not to directly respond, to take the win, quote unquote, was offensive to him. Because it seemed to suggest that it's Biden trying to appease the far left in his party. What's your response?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the president is entitled to his own views and whatever he decides to do. But I would never capitulate to the fringe. I'll never pander to that as well. In fact, that helps. That empowers Hamas. And Hamas they're actually convinced that they are winning the PR war, and they're never going to negotiate at this point. They think that they're going to hold on to the very end. And I know why they're not willing to provide any kind of proof of life. And I don't know why there's not more of that conversation in the media. Like, what about the hostages? What's happened to them? Where are they now? And let's just bring them home. And then all of the harsh words should be directed at Hamas, which started this and now continues to hold all of over 100 Israeli hostages.
This is very interesting, Fetterman, because he's also parted company with the Democrat Party on the border. You remember that?
I do remember that. Yes.
Yeah. And he has said, no, we got to pay attention to the border. And, you know, apparently a lot of Democrats are furious with Fetterman over the border, southern border agreement with Republicans. And now he's parting company with Biden on the appropriateness of a response to Iran. He then, of course, covers himself and says, but I'm, you know, great with this president. He's doing a fabulous job. But on two key major issues, the southern border and Israeli response, Fetterman parts company. Now, I like, you know, I really like Dave McCormick, who's running for Senate, not against Fetterman, but against Bob Casey. I really hope McCormick wins that seat. But I have to say, I feel a little better about Senator Fetterman than I did before, because he's showing some independence. I'd like to see that from a journalist or two as well. Any comment there, Claude?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because he, I think towards the end there, Jake Tapper had asked him, well, why do you think that media response to Hamas has not been negative or and even when it comes to, you know, what's going on with the people who remain hostages with Hamas? And it was interesting because, like, well, you work in media, Jake, and I don't see your network talking about it the way that you're asking, well, how come this isn't covered? So I just thought that was, you know, a little ironic. But I it's like you said, to see him speak out about, you know, what he believes, even against his own party and against the president, I like seeing that independent thinking. And, you know, you talked about the fringes and stuff like that. And that's so right. I think that now I do wonder how much something like this could hurt President Biden in the election. But I do believe, like you said, I don't think President Biden necessarily has one stance or the other. I think whatever his staff is telling him to say in the moment, that's exactly what he does. I think that he has to show support for Israel. And then at the same time, he doesn't want to show too much support. Like, we will not help back any offensive response to Iran. Yeah. If you really believe that, you didn't necessarily even have to say that. But it's because he's trying to satisfy people who don't want America backing Israel at all.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's exactly right. Anyway, we shall see what happens. Another thing I'd like to add is that apparently half of the launches they made, Iran, never made it to Israel. They were got into Syria, which is, you know, more or less an ally of Iran. And they landed in Iran itself. This is like the North Korean rockets that go off, land in North Korea. So, you know, not that competent was Iran, but full of bad intentions. Two other things, Claude, and I don't know if you've noticed, but I have. I think a lot of Americans have. This trial in New York, which almost everyone agrees is the weakest case against Trump. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a kind of mean-spiritedness to it. Not only are you elevating a misdemeanor into felony by the bootstraps here, Michael Cohen, who is one judge has called a, you know, well-established liar, is the key witness against Trump, which is, you know, you shouldn't have a case where that's your key witness. And his credibility is key. Second, again, this mean-spiritedness, I mean, Trump just came out, we're late afternoon here on Monday, and said, you know, he asked the judge through his lawyers, could he go to his son's graduation in Washington? And the judge said, no, can't. Well, you know, what the heck, you know, really? He's got to sit there for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Now, he can't, therefore, go to other trials. So they're asking for delays. But some of these jurisdictions don't want to give delays. Well, how can you not give a delay if the guy can't be there? His lawyers can't be there. It just seems to me, people have said, well, you know, if he gets a conviction or if they get a conviction, could change everything. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think people are catching on that this is just a terrible loading of the dice against Trump, like him or not. This is just a totally one-sided thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we talked about how ridiculous this particular charge is and this trial is. They don't care. Anything and everything that they can put against him, they're going to do. And they're hoping for anything to stick or anything to distract. And I just go back, oh, gosh, what was it now? 2 years ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago. You and I were talking the morning of the Mar-a-Lago raids, and we did a mini episode. And I think on that episode, we said, well, there's the launch of his 2024 campaign. If you remember that time, former President Trump was almost, you know, kind of fading away. He wasn't, you know, doing a whole lot. Some support was fading. And then they don't get that the more you attack him over things that are strictly political, the American people don't like that. And those who do not like the president, they label his supporters or people who may see this as unfair as MAGA extremists, as racists. And that's not the people who support President Trump.
Well, you got 50%. I mean, let's interpret the polls generously toward Biden and say it's 50-50. Really, do we really think 50% of the American people are MAGA extremists who want to blow up the Capitol? I don't think so.
Do you want to assume that they're MAGA extremists? Do you want to assume that they're racists? Do you want to, like, they're not, and they're 100% not. And I think the American people are getting tired of it. You know, the issue that will come up, I think, is the fact that will he gain support and voters from people who may normally not do that, but they're just tired of this. And, you know, like we talked about it before, who was the judge in New York that ran saying, I'm going to get him, when you know it's obviously political. It's just obviously political, and it's ridiculous. And, you know, he gets sympathy. He gets sympathy, I think, from the American people.
And he should.
This is not worthy of what they're giving it, especially this case. This is not important. This is not anything that's worth the American taxpayers' dollars going to this kind of trial. This is ridiculous.
But speaking of extremism, how about what's going on these bridges around the country? Brooklyn Bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, blocking the bridges and flying the flag of Hamas, terrorist organization. These are, you know, anti-Israel protesters blocking traffic everywhere. It's got to be against the law. I mean, you know, people have to get to work, to hospitals, to emergency rooms. I mean, I don't understand this. I just don't. I was watching for like hours.
Sure. Yeah.
San Francisco, and they're just standing there staring at the protesters. Now, I guess they'd locked themselves in with some iron bars or something. I don't know. But whatever they did, you can undo. But you cannot let people like this, you know, have a free reign. And you've got to let them know that this will not be tolerated. You can protest, but you cannot interfere with people doing their business, going to and from work, going to and from cemeteries, hospitals, airports to pick up. What are they doing? I mean, people were stuck on that bridge in San Francisco for 8 or 9 hours.
For most of the morning, yeah, for hours. I mean, hours stuck on the bridge because of the protests. And I was watching the San Francisco situation for a couple hours myself this morning. And what's it was afternoon, you know, our time in the East Coast. But the other thing is, you know, you look at this thing, you know, and I'm reading the headlines, anti-Israel protests, and I'm just thinking, well, anti-Israel for what? What is it that you're actually protesting? It isn't as if Israel's going across the Middle East, bombing countries and killing people for, you know, no reason at all. Israel simply is defending itself. And it seems like for maybe 3 or 4 days after what happened in October, when Hamas mercilessly killed and captured and tortured people at that music festival, maybe 2 or 3 days. And then next thing you know, there were just anti-Israel protests before there was any reaction. And it just dawns on me that it doesn't matter what Israel does. There are people in America that it doesn't matter what, if you're pro-democracy, pro-capitalism, if you're Western anything, they're going to protest it, because anything outside of that must be oppressed by those who are, you know, Western. And that doesn't make any sense to me. What are you protesting? They were just bombed this past weekend by Iran, able to defend themselves. And it reminds me again of what happened October 7th, that before they could do anything in response, they're already being protested by people here in America. That, and that used to not happen when it came to Israel, not on this grand scale.
Well, you have kind of a protest from Biden saying, you know, do nothing. You right. know, call it a draw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they launched 400 missiles and drones. Those missiles had hit, you would have killed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were able to intercept them all, or they landed in Syria, or some landed in Iraq, and some maybe never even made out of Iran. Call it a draw. Say that's okay, fine. We're even now. What the heck? This was meant to destroy the Israeli people. You can't leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
think they're going to not do it again or try again? Plus, let me just add one other thing. The president of the United States today, Monday, had the president of Iraq in the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear him ask the president of Iraq, did you approve missiles being launched from your country or over your country into Israel? I didn't hear President Biden ask him that. Did he? Any listeners fill us in on that? I don't think so. Go ahead.
I don't think so. But one thing that he did say before, when all the Iran talk was escalating about bombing Israel, he did say to Iran, don't do anything. Do not attack. They didn't listen. And if Israel feel like it's in its best interest to do what they have to do, they're not going to listen either. And so this is the definition of American strength being downgraded and laughed at all across the world. They're not listening to him. They don't care what he says.
Yeah, asthenia, loss of strength. Loss of muscle tissue. I mean, not listening to the U.S. And, you know, we may have still a lot of firepower. Though I don't know how much. I don't know how much is left in the arsenal. I'm worried we've emptied a lot of those shelves, a lot of bullets. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. All right. I'm worried about this country. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because of judges and courts and the Justice Department and these crazy protests at these colleges, which are teaching this junk, and the president, who feckless, you know, throwing out his chest. Oh, we're full support of Israel now. Good work, Israel. Good work, David Sling. Good work. You know, dome. What's the dome called?
The Iron Dome.
Yeah, the Iron. Good work, Iron Dome. You know.
David Sling,
but you know, don't do anything more. I mean, you know, defend, but don't. Lord knows, don't attack. Don't ever attack. Same message out of the UN. You know, okay, well, that's awful, but don't, you know, don't respond. I don't know. As if people believe that history suggests a story that, you know, strong and aggressive behavior never solved anything. It sure did. Sure did in World War II and World War I and many wars. This is mm-hmm. a crazy, crazy world we're living in, Claude. Crazy.
Absolutely. Just to clarify, so on Friday, when Biden gave a speech, and he said that he expected Iran to attack sooner rather than later, and a reporter had asked what would his message be to Iran, and he just said, don't. And so, and that's why he said the whole, we're devoted to the defense of Israel, and we will support Israel and help them stand, and Iran will not succeed. But you know, they're not listening to his don't. They're not listening to that. They couldn't care less.
Yeah, don't makes it seem as if you're going to do something to them.
Right. He said don't on Friday. And he said it on Friday, and on Saturday they went ahead and did it anyway. So
yeah, don't. And then at the end he says, well, I hope that's all you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of feckless.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show.
Claude, let's shift gears entirely, can we?
Sure. Why not?
Tell me who won the Masters. Let's talk golf first.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So Scottie Scheffler won the Masters. It's his second win in Augusta in 3 years. And he was just impressive.
He won one win in 22?
Yes, in 22. He won in 22. John Rahm won in 23. And now he's the champion in 2024. And it was so impressive to watch that final round. So first of all, the first two rounds, all everyone was talking about was the conditions. It was super windy. I mean, you could even see sand blowing out of the sand trap across people's face. There was a video of Tiger, I believe he was on 18, and he's just trying to shield his face from the sand that's blowing out. So really windy conditions. No one shot well. I think there was only five players that played under par, something like that. And he had, I think at one point he was tied with two others. And he put his foot on the pedal and just closed them out in dominant fashion on the back nine. And, oh, by the way, his wife is due any moment.
Yeah, man, beautiful story, isn't it? Made for TV story.
Mm-hmm.
How old is Scottie Scheffler?
Scottie Scheffler is 27.
So he's got a future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Goodness, yes. He's been probably the most dominant golfer on tour for the last, man, I'd say maybe 2.5 years.
Do you live guy, too?
No. He's doing quite nice on the PGA Tour. Great. No need to mess up his,
Okay. How many majors did Nicklaus have?
He's won 18 majors.
Nicklaus.
Correct.
And Tiger?
Tiger's at 15.
And how old is Tiger?
Tiger is 48.
Not going to win any more, is he?
I don't think so. I think he's done.
How many majors has Scotty Scheffler won?
So Scotty only has two majors. Both are Masters. He only wins in Augusta.
And that's the big one, right? I mean, that's the one.
To me, it is.
Well, absolutely. He's 26. He's got a lot of room, right?
Yeah, 27. He's got time.
27. That's amazing. That's the only majors he's won are the Masters.
Yep, he's got green jackets.
Like the only football game you've ever won is the Super Bowl, you know?
Right.
That's funny. Let's talk about that other dimension of Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, yeah, his faith. You know, one interesting thing about him, too, if you ever listen to any of his press conferences, I mean, he always talks about his faith, and he always talks about his family. Like, he was asked a question a couple of weeks ago, like, what keeps him grounded, and he says, you know, the people at home and the friends, you know, they're happy when I win, but it's not everything. I'm a regular guy around them, and they keep me grounded. They help me to understand that, you know, win or lose, my weeks are the same. It doesn't really matter. And he finds his foundation for his identity in his faith. And he talks about it all the time. You want me to play a clip?
Yes, please.
And a follow up. What do you think defines you?
Gosh, I don't know. You probably have to ask my wife. No, I'm a faithful guy. I believe in a creator. I believe in Jesus. Ultimately, I think that's what defines me the most. I feel like I've been given a platform to compete and, you know, show my talent. It's not anything that I did. You know, I think I sat up here a couple of years ago doing the interview after the 2022 Masters, and it's like, yeah, I was underprepared for what was about to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't, you know, I was very anxious that morning. I didn't know what to expect. And it's hard to describe the feeling, but I think that's what defines me the most is my faith. You know, I believe in one creator, and I've been called to come out here, do my best, compete, and glorify God. And that's pretty much it.
Hey, by the way, Bill, you remember Byron and I were talking on the previous show about that Netflix show, Full Swing. In season one, he was in a couple of episodes in season one of Full Swing, and in one of them, you know, he talks about his faith, and he's got the Bible right there open on his kitchen counter, he and his wife, and yeah, I mean, he's the real deal.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show.